Let's begin. We just read the Pesukim and we discussed some things. Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehiyah Bidvarayim. Okay, so we just read the Pesukim, the two Pesukim, and we discussed two issues. Now we're learning the Farshah. So let's just review by reading the Pesukim again very quickly. So on page 416. 416 Pasuk Yud and Pasuk Yud Aleph Vayiru Hanashim Yira Gedoila. The men were terrified. By the way, were there any women on the ship? Doesn't say anywhere. Okay, doesn't say that. It doesn't say. Well, does the word anoshim doesn't that possibly include women?
Possibly.
Okay. They didn't count. Why? Okay. So that is an interesting question we should look out for. If there were women on the ship. Okay, we have to pay attention to that. But it says, Vayiruho anoshim. The men were afraid. Yira gidoyla. We discussed yesterday the word yira versus the word vayecharad. Versus the expression admoid. Vayayimru elav. They said to him, mazois osisa. What have you done? I guess that is just an expression. That does not appear to be something very specific. It appears to be that because the end of the pasuk indicates that he told them what he did. Ki gidlanu. So when it says here mazosa sisa, they're not asking a question. It's an expression of frustration. What have you done? Ki yadu hanashim ki lufnei Hashem huvareach yesflef Hashem ki gidlohem. Because he told them, as we discussed, there's more to the story than is actually recorded in the pasukim. And they said to him, what should we do? You know the solution yourself. You tell us, as we discussed yesterday, the second point, that it's getting worse. The situation is not stable. We cannot get used to this because the situation is getting worse and worse every moment. Now let's see the Mefarshim. Pasuk Yud. Let's start with the Mitzudos David. Pasuk Yud begins on page 417. Vayi Re'u. They were terrified. B'shamam shechoto l'Hashem. What were they afraid of? They were afraid that it's worse than we thought. We thought that you're a ganef. You stole money from someone. Who knows? You're a noyef. Who knows? No. Now we hear that you have rebelled against Hashem. The worst thing you can possibly do. Hashem sends you on a mission. And you say to Hashem, see you later. What's going on here? As we learned before, that their theory was money from, you can solve every problem in this world with money. Right? Isn't that a very good way to live? Money can solve shidduchim, can solve refuah. Money. You pay enough money, you get an annulment of the marriage. It's true. It's not a joke. I told you once that story. My father did something that I never saw him doing. Rabbanis. I tell you, when someone came, two from people, Bnei Torah, seemingly Bnei Torah, they came to the house and they said that they wanted to know about one of my father's balabatim, and they were asking questions. Like, what do you want to know about this balabas? All these questions. So he says, after my father pried into the questions, these people were hired by a kohen who wanted to marry a gerusha. Shomer Torah mitzvos wanted to marry a gerusha. So you can't marry. So, but I want to marry the gerusha. There's got to be a solution to every problem. So what's the solution? Maybe we can annul the marriage. That the Grusha was never really married. What do you mean she was never really married? She had a beautiful wedding in a fancy hall 20 years ago, and there's a photographer, there's a video, and there were big chashav rabbanim. Who are the witnesses under the chuppah? What do they show in the video who the witnesses? One of the witnesses happens to be one of my father's balabatim. So they want to know, does he maybe, any possibility, shave with a razor? Because if my father can tell them that he shaves with a razor instead of using an electronic shaver, it means that he's an avarion. He's over an Issa Doraisa, and he's pasul le'edus, so it was never a marriage. So therefore the gerish is not a gerishin. And Mimela, Now he can marry her. My father looks at these two fellows who look like, you know, B'nai Yitra, right out of a yeshiva. Where do you come? Where do you come to do something like this? For money. For money. You pay someone enough. Who hired you? What rough? For enough money, you can buy a soine betza. So all solutions can be solved. My father, mama, she picked them up with his hands and he threw them out of the house. Like, where do you go? This is what you do. This is what you do. She's a grusha. That's how it is. I mean, what are you going to go? You're going to annul the marriage with out of your mind? And so here, that's what they thought over here. There's a problem. We can solve the problem with money. Hashem will calm down. Whatever the situation is, it'll be okay. But now when they realize that we're not dealing with a sin against another fellow man. The sin over here is against Hashem, that Yonah refused to obey Hashem's direct order. There's no way you can refuse Hashem with money. And therefore, they realize they are in a lot of trouble. That's how the Mitzudah is a very interesting take. Why now, suddenly, Vayiruhu Anashim Yira Gidoyla. The Yira Gidoyla was, it's not like they thought. They were living in a world of fantasy, where every problem can be solved with the almighty dollar. And now they realize that, guess what? Not every dollar can be solved with, every problem can be solved with money. I remember many years ago, there was a very, very wealthy person that I know of, and he had a daughter in Shidduchim. And I know this from my mother, because we're the whole, so it's a whole Chagagah, how I know all the details. And he really thought he can get the perfect boy that he wants. He wanted a boy for his daughter, a certain type of boy, just, you know, to fit all of his credentials. And he thought there's nothing holding him back from getting what he wants, basically because he got it all. He's a very wealthy person. And he very quickly got to learn that when it comes to Shidduchim, with all of his money, it doesn't go like that. It doesn't, just because he has all the money, doesn't mean he'll get what he wants. Doesn't mean I remember, just hit me like it was many, many years ago. It's a rude awakening when you come to realize that not everything in this world can be purchased, can be solved. Every problem can be solved by money, and that's the Musar Haskel. And it's interesting over here, Yom Kippurim. You know, you go everything relates to the moment of truth. And Yom Kippur, Mincha, Ne'ilah. Here you are. I'll be okay. I have enough money in the bank to get through the year. Guess what? Not every problem that comes your way can be solved with money. Just because you have money in the bank doesn't necessarily mean you're okay. It must be these were very wealthy people on the boat. If that's what the Mitzvah learns, is that they were interrogating him, and their entire goal was to discover what the problem was, because they'll solve the problem with money. There must have been some money here that they had access to solve the problem. And now when they realize that money's not going to solve the problem, we're in trouble. A year of Gidoyla, yeah.
Didn't they realize that all their lives were at stake? So it wasn't money they were going to seek.
No, but they believed, these were spiritual people. They believed that if they would pledge, there's a storm. No one else is suffering. No one else is caught up in this storm but them. They realize there's a hashkacha pratis. Why? Because there's an angry fellow somewhere in this world. There's a victim. There's a victim somewhere in this world that has been abused and has a complaint. And Hashem is taking up his complaint, or some sar, some whatever, however they were thinking. And I'm assuming that they felt that if we will pledge, they didn't have smartphones, right, to go and make a telephone call, to wire the money, okay? But they're saying if we make a pledge, and that spiritual entity out there, Ribbono Shel Olam, or if they were still even there with the Zara, will recognize our pledge that we will make amends with this fellow who is harmed. So then this koyach that is causing them danger will dissipate, because they will sincerely accept upon themselves to make amends for the wrong that has been done with money. But now they realize that's not a solution. because the problem is not about money. The problem is because Yonah has defied a direct order. There's nothing they can do with all the money in the world. And that's why now they realize the severity of the situation that they find themselves. Let's go further. Kiyaru Ma Zoisos, they said to him, Ma Zoisos Sisa, what have you done? Lo Amru Kishoilim Ella Kimat Kimas Mihim, like we said before. This was not a real question. This was a rhetorical statement. Uh-oh, we are in trouble. Ko'oimer, this means to say, Eich Asisa Dava Kazel Limrod Pi Hashem. How could you rebel against Hashem v'levrech v'mokim ha'nevuah to run away nevuah v'dugmosoy me'asisa v'atigdeves levavi? We learn from Lavan. Lavan said to Yaakov, how dare you try to run away from me? Yeah?
That's why things we've had before about, it's an exclamation,
but ma is a... Ma noira ha'mokim hazeh. Exactly. It's not a question, like we said by the Seder. Where are she'ela u'seshuva? Where are the questions of the Haggadah? Chazal tell us that the difference between the Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim on Lel Pesach and the whole year is that Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim is b'derech she'ela u'seshuva. Question is, so where are the questions? So everyone will tell you, ma nishtana laylazeh. That's not a good answer, because ma nishtana, according to many, is not a question. It's a statement. Ma nishtana. Wow, look at this night. Look how amazing this is. So where then are the questions? The answer is, Pesach, question. Al Shuma. That's the question. And the answer is, Al Shuma Pesach. Moror zush on al shuma. The three times you say al shuma in that paragraph, there are the she'elos of the night, not the manish. Manish has a weak answer. Maybe yeah, maybe not. I mean, you can do whatever you say, what you want to say, but manish can really, really mean how awesome. So here, Stingley, here we have the same exact idea. And look, what have you done to us? And notice the irony. The irony is we spend more than a week trying to understand what was Yonah thinking. And Yonah, we had all these Lamdisha, Mahalchim, and all of them, every one of them, Mepharshim, but the Yoytzim and Aklal has taken up the question, how could he have a Hava Amina to escape the escape Hashem? Hashem gives you a direct order. What are you doing? You're running away. Come on, what are you thinking over here? And everyone is splitting hairs to try to go and rationalize Yonah's thinking, what he's doing. And here, who comes, gives him the ultimate mussar? Oivdei Avodah Zarah, the editorial of the New York Times. It's not a joke. It's not really not a joke. Is they say to Yonah, here we have 70 goyim. They're all 5 minutes ago screaming to their gods. Every nationality, this boat was, you know, was NATO, this boat. This boat had, you know, on it, UN peacekeeping boat. This was a UN peace, Veloz Saginar, you know. Peace, Veloz Saginar is real, keep the peace, right? UN boat, all the nationalities over here on this boat, and they're all crying out to their gods, and they're giving Yonah Musa, they're saying, Yeshaita, what were you thinking? All the Musa, all the Lamdash and Mahalchan that we have in the previous, it's nice Lamdash, but in the big picture of things, it's just dead wrong. It's dead wrong. And therefore, and who's giving him the Musa? The Goyim. They see it as it is. And you know, this is very common. This thing is very common. You see people do things that You can write a sefer rationalizing why it's correct to do. Al pi halacha. Give you 100 reasons. I don't want to say it's a little lashon hara. I can think of a certain thing that bothers me very, very much. It's going on now. And I've mentioned this to a number of people, chasher people, and they all have nothing what to say to me. They don't even say a peep. They don't want to say I'm right. I don't know why they don't want to say. They didn't say a word to me. They listened to every word I said, and they have nothing to say. And if you would put me on the team of that person who's doing this, I would be glad to join that team, and we can write an encyclopedia giving 100 reasons why, according to halacha, it is 100% mutter, if not even a mitzvah. But yet, when you step back and you look at it objectively, this is keneged kol ha-toira kula. If you want to know the example, talk to me privately. I'll tell you what it is. Okay?
This is a, we have a family saying,
there's always a heter. There's always a heter, like my father used to joke. The Surgeon General, Paskin, in the United States, that smoking is dangerous on every pack of cigarettes. It's damaging for your health. So nishmartem me'oy l'nafshay seichem. What more do you want? Is an iser de'oraisa u'shmartem me'oy l'nafshay seichem me'oyd. So is the Surgeon General does not qualify to be the representative of the Ribbono Shel Olam to say u'shmartem me'oyd l'nafshay seichem? Are you going to tell me that it's not mamish? It's like basically on every pack of cigarettes it says, by smoking this cigarette you are in violation of an isur de'oraisa u'shemartem me'oy l'nafshay seichem. It's exactly what it says. This is a translation of what it says there from the Surgeon General. So how come people don't make a stand? How come especially young boys, you know, they don't? You know, they have the whole culture of jokes that go along with this. What bracha? What, why don't you make a bracha on a cigarette? Because the first time you smoke, it's in the bathroom in the yeshiva, so you can't make a bracha in the Beis Hakisei. There's a whole culture of jokes that go along with this. So what's going on? So how come? So my father, you joke because there's always a heter. What's the heter? You sell your lungs to a goyim. You sell your lungs to a guy, so it's not your lungs. So there's not a shmartin oil enough shoy seichem. There's always a kunz. But when you stand back and you look at the big picture, it's dead wrong. So here, that's exactly who's the one that always gives us the musr? Someone who's objective. An editorial, or even of the New York Times. How many times can already people, the same people, write a news that they're no longer, they've canceled their subscription to the New York, it's like almost like they've canceled their subscription, and the next day they renew it, so they can say they canceled their subscription 3 weeks later. You see this all the time. But sometimes, the New York Times, and sometimes even like the other newspaper, I want to go get into a whole discussion, you know, sometimes they're right. Sometimes they see things... They see things that, you know, maybe we should pay attention. Not 90% of the time, it's just outright anti-Semitism and this rishus. But every once in a while, you know, they're touching upon something that maybe we should pay attention. Maybe there are things in society that are not 100% like we think they are. We're correct. And here is a very powerful Musa Haskell. We rationalize Yonah. We had spent hours on this. And the goyim say, take all your Torah out the window. The bottom line is, Hashem gave you a direct order and you are in violation. And they're right. Okay, so it's unbelievable Musar Haskel. Mazos HaSisa. Next. Eich HaSisa. You want to say something, Ramchal? You want to say something?
I'm just
going to
say, the old joke about
Yonah
is that Surgeon General's report first came out, was 9 out of 10 smokers gave up reading.
It's called cognitive dissonance.
She had pictures. They have to picture everything. I was blown away when they started years ago putting the hand signs on the don't walk. It used to be, you know, I grew up, don't walk, walk. And I remember the school bus when I first understood this as a little child, you know, blinks, walk. And don't. So they. Wow, look, they save money. They have don't walk, and when you walk, it's walk. And then all they have to do for don't walk is just add the light for don't. And a little child, wow, what a chiddush, you know? How you able to, and then I really was blown away when years later when they started with the hand. The hand and the little guy walking. And I said to myself, have we, with such shaitan, that we need We have to have images, and we forgot, we don't know how to read. It's because there are so many people in the country that don't know how to read.
Spanish has 6 other languages now, that's why.
So they don't know those few words worked. We have to put a universal symbol instead of. I felt that it was a
Yurida,
or you dumbed down. That's how I look at it. Some people tell me no, Adaraba.
It is truly
dumbed down, and that's the United States Army, it's not only the United States. All armies discovered people couldn't follow instructions. So they started putting on the manuals graphics.
Images.
So now, then the industry picked up. Any instruction you get from a store to how to put in a shelf together, they give you images.
Well, that's maybe different, because there you're dealing with putting together a bookcase, putting together very complex.
That's mentality crept in.
Okay, right. So, look, I had a friend who was making a joke with me. He's saying, what? You're going to see the day by every street corner, there are going to be three signs, three of those boxes. One has an image of a man, one of a woman, and one of none of the above. So when you want to cross the street, there'll be three images.
Don't laugh. There's a new play coming out from Andrew Lloyd Webber with Cinderella.
Guy. Never mind.
Okay, let's go weiter. So over here, Mazos, they said to him, what have you done? Next. The next one of them said, they were aware. He spilled the beans. This means, now here is something where the Mitzudos David differs with what we learned in Rabbeinu Bachya yesterday, 2 days ago, and that is, these are very powerful words, ki higid lohem, and this is very much nogea, Rabbi Sai, the Haggadah, Lel Seder. Okay, this is a very powerful expression. You can extrapolate and make a whole drasha. What does it mean, ki higid lohem? You know, every time you have a word, you always have to search the other usages of the word in Tanakh to get an appreciation of the word. Lel Seder is a mitzvah. V'gadita levincha b'yoyim ahu leimar. And the first question we discussed before Pesach, why does the Torah use that word? When the Torah tells us how to teach children, it's very clear. It says, v'shinantam levonecha v'dibarta bom. Or vilimaditem oisam esbenechem. Every single day in Kriya Shema, we have two different words to teach. Either vishinantam or vilimaditam. Vilimaditem. We have either the word limud or the word shinun. And Chazal, in fact, they pick up one refers to your biological children, one pasuk refers to your talmidim. The first parasha refers to your talmidim, and the second parasha refers to your biological children. So why do we use the word vishinantam by your talmidim verse vilimaditem by your biological children? Whatever the reasons are. But now, when it comes to the Haggadah, and we have a mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim.
From Haggadah to Sipur.
Oh, I just changed them as well. But what is the we call it Sipur? Very good. But what is that? What does it say in the Torah? What is the Torah's word? It doesn't say Sipur. It says that's Chazal's term. It's a good point. Why did they change the word? But what's the word in the Torah? V'higadita levincha. What does that mean? Oh, yeah, that's a new word. It's not in my vocabulary. What is that word? V'higadita levincha. So everyone is all of a sudden, I don't know. We got to figure this out. So one of the more popular one approaches is Lashon of Eidos, testimony. Testimony. Lashon of, it comes from the word of Eidos, when witnesses stand before the judge. That's a term that's used elsewhere in regard to testimony. That changes the whole meaning. That changes the whole essence of what the Haggadah is. You're basically testifying. The children are a jury of your peers. And you're saying Eidos, they're the judges. Isn't that amazing? Your children are acting as judges before you, the Father, that changes the dynamics of the Seder. You come to the Seder, you think you're the boss, right? The parent, the father. Who's buying the Afikoyim present? I mean, let's get serious over here. Okay, that's the one who makes the decisions, the one who gives out the Afikoyim present. I'm the boss. I'm the judge. Okay? You people over here, you come bow down to me. The Torah says, V'higadta levincha. If you will accept this translation, which has to be proven that it is correct, but I don't remember the sources, that the word hagada is an expression, a word that is used exclusively in regard to testimony.
Right. You could bear a witness without going. No, the Abar Benel.
That's not. No, what do you mean bear witness?
Remembrance. Bear witness. The Abar Benel makes a very big distinction because he said it's called magid in the hagada. But the mitzvah is sipri, it's yes.
Oh, who invented that word?
Says, so what it means is that the magid is saying that God is testimony. You're reading on a bill. The mitzvah of sipri is after the seder is over to sit and discuss. The sipri is yes, right. Tell the story. The background, a lot of
so details. That's a different.
Right. You have to read the Haggadah, that's called magid.
Oh. So the Haggadah is just the testimony. Right. You read the testimony. And when the Haggadah is over, then you engage the entire... The Rambam says, you're obligated to stay up the whole night
right.
of Pesach. Not like Shavuos. Doesn't tell you Shavuos. That Pesach to give over...
Saying your right. of saying the
but isn't that amazing then? Because if the word Haggadah means testimony, testimony is something that is given... in front of an authority. Dr. Fruchter, right? Even though you bear testimony, but that's a borrowed term. That's not the pure use of the word.
Like the Holocaust,
they bear witness. That's a borrowed...
stories that happen.
Correct. But when people go on in front of a video camera and they tell over what happened and they say they're bearing witness, that's a borrowed term. The literal use of the word testimony, to bear witness... Right. Is you testify in front of an authority. You go to an authority. So this doesn't make any sense. This is like an oxymoron in concept. You're at the Seder, you're the Bala boss, you sit, you're Yoshev Roish, you're making the Kiddush, you're doing everything, you're in charge, you're paying for it. Okay? And you're giving out the Afikam and you're the boss. And the Torah says, guess what? You are a witness at a trial, and the people who you are testifying, they are the judges. Your little children sitting around the table are the Sanhedrin HaGadol. It's not a joke. And the Torah says, that's right, that's really what it's all about. You have to convince them. You're on trial. When you are at the Seder Tel, V'gadta Levincha Bayom Ahu Leymar. Levincha, your children is the Sanhedrin. You got to convince them, and they're going to issue your sentence. How will they issue your sentence? Will they say Kaddish for you? It's not a joke. Will they say Kaddish for you? Will they remain religious Jews? Will they? That will be your sentence. They are your judges. It changes the entire dynamics of the Haggadah when you appreciate the word V'higadta means you are testifying in front of an authority. And in the world that we live in, the authority are judges, people who have trained and spent their whole life to prepare for this, and in the world of Torah, to sit in the Lishkas Hagazis. Who can be Zoycha to sit in the Lishkas Hagazis? Well, your children are those judges on this night. And it's your duty to prepare an eloquent testimony to make sure that you convince them that what you're saying is correct, because they're going to judge you. And the way they're going to judge you will be the way they conduct their lives. If they believe what you're saying is true, they will emulate you and they will be religious Jews and you will have much nachas. And if they declare you guilty, that your testimony is fake, because you yourself don't believe in it, then they will live a different type of life. And that will give you the greatest grief, much greater than sitting in solitary confinement in some prison somewhere. So this is what the word Haggadah means. Okay, that's one mahalich. But now let's go to another mahalich. Here we have, the machlekes between that Rabbeinu Bachya and the Mesudas David opens up a whole new world in the meaning of the word Haggadah. According to, I think it was Rabbeinu Bachya, if I'm not mistaken, when it says Ki Yigid Lohem, he told us that they asked him, we learned yesterday, 4, 5, 6 questions. Every one of the Mefarshim was a different count. Was it 4 questions, 5 questions, 6 questions, whatever it was. And the problem is that in the text that we have read, he didn't really answer the questions. He spoke around it. He gave roundabout answers. Everyone has a different take on did he answer, did he not answer. According to what we learned yesterday in the Beinu Bachya, he did not answer the questions. He avoided answering. He just said, you're asking me too many questions. Let me just tell you something unrelated. I'm a Jew and I'm a Yorei Shamayim. And then it goes on into the next pasuk, and it says, Ki higid lohem, the words that we just discussed. And what does it mean? Here, he told them, mila b'mila, word for word, every little detail of what happened. Every detail, he left nothing out. Hashem came to him, and Hashem told him, go to Nineveh. And Yonah said, no, I'm not going, and he avoided, and he got into the ship. He told him exactly what he did. According to Rabbi Nebachia, higid means, I spilled the beans. I told you everything there is you can possibly know. There's nothing left to know. That's the translation of the word ki higid. How come the pasuk doesn't tell us everything that he told him? It's not important. It's not important to know the details. But he did, because that's what the word higid means. According to the Mitzudas Dov, that's not what it means. Ki higid is a meaning, they got it. They didn't hear from him word for word what happened.
They
figured it out. They were able to assess the situation. So now, when it comes the night of Pesach, what is the bits of Haggadah? If you look like a Beinu Bachya, so you know what Haggadah means? You sit down with the children, and you go through the Pesukim, like we do in the Haggadah, you read the text. Read the text. Let me tell you every little thing. The more you can read, the more Rashis, the more Rambans, the more Mefarshim, the more you can spell out all the gory details. There wasn't only 10 Makos. There was 200 Makos, 250 Makos. You go and you break it open into all the gory details. Because that's what Haggadah means, according to Rabbeinu Bachya. The Mitzudas David says, no, that's not what Haggadah means. Haggadah means you give them some flavor, some salt and pepper, and they'll figure it out.
And in the Chumash, it's the Amag Mashma the other way. When Yaakov complains to his sons, what you tell them all these things, he says, V'anagid lo, al pi adorim v'ele. I only told them what he asked. In other words, we didn't just talk. We answered his questions.
He figured it out. Exactly.
Anagid lo, al pi adorim v'ele, they said. That's what it says.
So the truth is both of these, but according to the Mitzudas David, that's not what Haggadah means. He's telling you that Haggadah doesn't mean I said every little detail. Let's look how he translates it. The word higid doesn't mean he actually said it means. They figured it out on their own. As if higid lohem b'peh mole. So you see here, the way the word is used in the context in Sefer Yonah is, you don't have to go tell all the details. That's not the goal. The goal is just to give over enough flavor of what's going on for the people that on their own to figure it out. And when you come to the Haggadah, Lil Seder, you don't have to go through the details. The children should just get a taste of Yirat Shamayim. A taste of what it's all about, of what Yiddishkeit is all about, and once they have that spark that's in them, they got it. You have fulfilled. They got the message. You have fulfilled the mitzvah of v'higadita levincha. Give them enough tools for them to nurture, develop, and expand upon Yitzias Mitzrayim. a major difference. And if you study the Haggadah, you'll see that both of these elements are correct. Like we said, and it talks about we break open all the makos into all the gory details in 200 v'chulu v'chulu. But yet, we all know that when everything is said and done, you can't teach in a few minutes. The whole Seder is over in 5 minutes. By the time you sit down and all the children, they get up on top of the table and they sing their songs, it's over, right? The whole thing is over before we even begin. So you obviously realize there's not much time you have available the night of the Seder. So what are you really trying to give? You're trying to create an environment where you give over the flavor of Yiddishkeit, and they'll now have with them that passion, that yearning to develop in their entire lives. That is the meaning of Haggadah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the sefer is used in the Chumash about the Sar Masri and Sar Ofer. When you all say Vayaro something on Zohafim, it says Vayisaper Lehem is Chalim.
Ah, Vayisaper. They're related.
Because it's not, they're just telling
details. Telling maybe it's more the details.
Now you, I'm just.
You have to really dig deep. To recount, you have to dig deep. What is the precise meaning of the word "steep"? We have four words. We really have four words so far. We have shinun, v'shinantam levonecha, v'limaditem limud. We have haggadah in regard to children, right? V'haygadta levincha, and now we have Chazal's term. How Chazal look at the whole story as sipur yitzias mitzrayim. So we have four terms. And each one, without question, you'll find 20 different interpretations of what each word can possibly mean. And of course, there's truth in every interpretation. Elu v'elu divrei Elokim
chayim. In the bow, you have a few of the lashonos. Of course, then after it says at the beginning, bo el paro, lamantis saper bios nevin kovem
in the bow. Oh, that's weird. Lamant is very good. That's where it comes from. Lamantis saper, so soif ma'is ma'achshav t'chila. Achar ha'ma'isa. Then we have higar et levincha. But in advance, to tell you what's coming, is Sipur. Leman, to say, is the word to Sipur, is in the future.
Testimony, but now you connect the dots.
Yeah, but there it didn't happen yet. There, in that context, right. It's telling
it's
you the future.
On. Yeah, what's, it was only up to the eighth month.
Interesting. So, you know, if you look at it like that, you can say, since the whole Indian of the Sipur of Lel Pesach is just a template for the Geula HaAsida, so Sipur Yitzias, just like the way the word Sipur is used in the Torah, it was said before it happened. I'm going to go to. We're going to take Paro. We're going to mock him. We're going to make a mockery out of him, so that your children leman tesaper eis asher what Hashem's going to do.
What I'm going to do now is going to give you a lot of, you know.
Material
to tell
for the future. So we're standing here.
How to connect the dots.
We're before it happened, and we take that word and we apply it to the Haggadah, and we say there's a mitzvah, the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. But wait a minute. If the word Sipur connotes it did not yet happen, the Torah says v'higadita testimony. Testimony refers to what has happened. That's the whole essence of testimony. You are relating the past. So the answer is it's both. You are relating what happened in the past, and we recognize Maisei Ovois Simin Labanim. What happened in the past is a template for what will happen for the Geula HaAsida. So telling over the past, in essence, is a sipur. Is a script, is a preparation for how things will play out for the Geula HaAsida. Okay, so this is your verse. Right. You're opening up why these two come together. The Haggadah.
Like I keep saying, be able to connect it, you'll be able to say, this happened because of this, this happened because of that. In other words, not just saying testimony, that this is what happened.
There's another idea.
I want you to know why it happened.
That's a different idea. That's a different idea of connecting the dots.
That's what he's saying in that pasuk.
Okay, that's no, but I hear what you say, but I think there's a more fundamental thing about the pasuk that it's an advance.
Right.
It's an advance of the future. Okay, so we have different ideas, but okay. Let's go further in the Mitzudos. Ma naselach. So pasuk Yud Aleph in the Mitzudos of Ma naselach. Ma nasemcha sheyishtoik hayom eleinu v'lo yosef lehar ish oid beharamas hagalim. What should we do to satisfy, to cause the wind, the waves to subside? Ki ritzoyne loymar, hine hayom mar ish Big Allah b'chol pam yoyser. This is what we said yesterday. The word ki yam hoylech v'soer. It's getting worse and worse. Ulchein therefore ein penai lehisakev ulis yashay v'adavar. We don't have time to sit around. V'lezeemor ato manasi mach v'chein yokum. We don't have time. Time is of the essence. Let's take a look over here at Rashi. Rashi is a one short Rashi on these two psukim. Manas mazoisosisa. Lama asisakev levrach min Moishel Kozeh. Rashi is not just, you know, Rashi must, I don't know what Rashi means. Rashi, I can translate the words, we all can translate the words. Hashem is the Moishel. Rashi must be telling us something here very, very deep. What is Rashi trying to allude to? Rashi here is alluding to that the Ribbono Shel Olam in this situation is behaving as a Moishel. Now we know we have a Mori Chazal. Many Mori Chazal that tell us to describe Hashem in many different ways. By Har Sinai, Hashem appeared to be a Zokein Moli Rachamin. By Kriyas Yamsuf, Hashem appeared to be a Gibor Milchama, Hashem Ish Milchama. I don't remember the Medrash, but the Medrash goes on and describes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is multifaceted. HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears at all different times, different situations, to appears to be have a different hat. Hashem wears many hats, and on Rosh Hashanah, what hat does Hashem wear? HaMelech. Hashem is the Melech. Now, is the Melech, the word Melech, the same as the word Moishel? Definitely not. We know we have many psukim which tell us the fundamental difference in the word melech and the word moishel. What's the difference between the two? Melech means a melech biloyam. Melech means democracy. You rule by the will of the people. Ein melech biloyam. If you don't have people following you, people giving you support, then you're not a melech. Moishel means a dictator. Totalitarian authority, total. That's it. I'm the boss here. I don't care. You don't tell me what to do. I tell you what to do. Reminds me of the Riyats. When the Riyats came to America, they came off the boat. All of the Hasidim came to Mekabel Pond. They say there were thousands of people. Rabbi Kevin, he has a very eloquent description from his research of what it was like when the Riyats, when he came to America. It must have been 1940, something like that. He came to America from Russia. And there were many, many, there were probably even millions of Russian Jews, I don't know the numbers, who came to America from going back from the end of the 19th century into now into, and they all, the vast majority, like 99%, were not religious at all. They were not religious, Zakihus, nothing. But they heard the Rebbe's come. They all came, Makabel, Panim, the Rebbe, the Riyatz. Rav Yosef Yitzchak, Schnerenson. Schnerenson, six of the Babish Rebbe. And what happened? They all came and then suddenly they broke out with a Lubavitch Nigun, an old Lubavitch Nigun. And they all started to sing Lebedik, this old Lubavitch Nigun. And there was this fire that was rekindled in the Lubavitch Chassidim. And what happened? It was over. They all went back, business as usual. They all went back. Rachman Litzon, a lot of them were lost, these people. They went to the Rebbe the next day. He was very old. I think he was already in a wheelchair. And they said to him, Rebbe, you come to America. We have Hasidim here. We're going to take care of you. We're sending you upstate to a retirement facility. You're going to go into a nursing home, whatever, an assisted living facility. We'll give shiurim there. And we'll take care of you. And that's the end. Lubavitch has come to the end. As many things at that time, they believed come to the end. And the Rebbe listened. He listened and didn't say a word. The next day, he called them. He called in the Hasidim, the people in charge. He said to them, I thought about what you said to me, but let me tell you something. Where I come from, the Rebbe gives orders and the Hasidim listen. I see here in America, the Hasidim are giving me orders. Where I should go and what I should do. It's not the way it goes. I'm giving the orders. Nothing has changed. Nothing. I'm not going to no retirement home. We're going to start all over again. And that was the beginning of Lubavitcher. Look what Lubavitcher said in America. whether you're a Lubavitcher Chassid, or as they say, you're not yet a Lubavitcher Chassid. Not as we say. You can't deny the accomplishments that are just mind-boggling. And all began with the Rebbe saying, where I come from, the Rebbe gives the orders, not the Chassidim. So here...
That's the Malbim on by Yisimini, Leo and Faro, Moshe
Michelle.
All three Lashonos in one pasuk.
In one pasuk. Oh, that's Gevaldik.
Malbim says, yeah.
Ah.
Yisimini, Leo, Lefaro, Yadon, Lechol, Beisol, Moshe, Bechol, Eretz,
Mitzvah. Three, but not the word Melech. Not
no,
the word Melech.
Av,
Odoin, and Moshe. Wow, that's a powerful thing.
So
wow, beautiful.
Says, sort of along those
three
lines,
different types of rulership.
In other words, it's a different relationship. Like
father is different. A master and a Moishel.
He wants
an Adon is more of a Malchus.
In other words, I have total,
total control.
But I have total.
I don't need your approval. Even if every single citizen, there's no such thing in politics today. Could you imagine? There's no such thing in this world. There's no real dictatorships anymore in this world. Doesn't exist. I'm not. Is there a real dictatorship? Real? Even North Korea? Can he make a decision? He has such power that he can make a decision that no one in the country wants. They'll get rid of him.
Yes, listen to China.
I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe, maybe there is. But in all the democracies in the world, it's impossible. No leaders. That's not what they're there for. They're there to follow the will of the people. That's the whole essence of what a leader is. To follow that he's been voted in. He represents what they want. He can't go against their will. But a Moish, that's Malchus. Ein Melech Beloy Am. The Ribbono Shel Olam is a melech. No one's denying the fact that because we are makabel o malchus shamayim. But when push comes to shove, Hashem is a moishel. He gives the orders, even if it's not popular and it's not accepted. He gives. So Rashi here, if you just translate the words, we need Rashi to tell us this. Obviously, every word of Rashi is kodesh kodoshim. And if Rashi is over here telling us, say Rashi over here saying lama asisa kein livroyach. Min Moishel Kozeh. The key word that Rashi is coming to the Mechadesh is the word Moishel. Oh, Hashem over here has demonstrated he's the boss. How dare you try to deny, to reject, disobey a direct order. Hashem gave you a direct order. You come up with all of these lamdasha kunsim of how it doesn't apply to me. It applies to you. Hashem is the Moishel. Whether you like it or not, this is what you have to do. This experience, Rashi over here is saying a mouthful. He's telling us here that this experience of the boat, the ship at sea, being tossed and turned, and the recognition that their lives are in jeopardy and it's just a matter of moments before they die, was an expression of Hashem as a Moishel. The end of Yom HaKippurim, everything always comes down to this. The end of Yom HaKippurim is Hashem, you're the Moishel. We start Rosh Hashanah, Melech. We blow the shofar. Maybe the whole Sefer Yonah is read only because of this Ran Rashi. We start the Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is you blow the shofar. Why do you blow the shofar? Malchus. Right? It's Malchus. Himluchi aleichem. What's Malchus? Hashem, we call the shots. It's a democracy, this world. Ein melech, beloyam. Okay, even though there's a lot of Torah, there's two types of melech, but that's not good to learn very posh. We start off Rosh Hashanah blowing the shofar. Hashem, we're in charge. The Hasidim call the shots. Malchus, we'll work with you. And when we come to the end of the Aseres he made Teshuvah, and we come to Ne'ilah, we come to recognize this is not a Malchus. Hashem is a Moshe. We're in your hands. Kichoymer biyad hayotzer. The experience of the Aseres he made Teshuvah is the experience of being on a ship that's about to sink. And we're not the boss. Hashem is, he tells us what to do. Yeah.
Sometimes you have both expressions.
Correct. That's what Rabbi Mayaski said.
Like he, Hashem,
Moshel Bagoyim, right? By we, right? Right. Everyone that, as I'm drawing from those Mamore Chazal, which they use those expressions to show us the difference between the Melech and the Moshel. Rashi here, if you just translate the words, what are you bothering, wasting our time? What are you telling us over here? But when you dig deep into Rashi, Rashi has something in mind for us. And what the word that really stands out in this few words is the word Moshel. And the richness, the depth of that word puts the entire story in an entirely different light, a different perspective. Okay, let's now take a look at the Radak. We have a few minutes. Go to our third Mefarash. Pasik Yud and Yud Aleph, Vayi Ri'u. They were afraid. Kigilohem. He jumps to the end of the Pasik. He jumps to the end of the pasuk of Yigilochem. Kishamar lochem v'yes Hashem elokei hashamayim ani yorei. Amru lo imkein eicho yozeh hasar ba'avurcha. If you really fear Hashem, you're a good man, then this should not happen. That's not the way it's supposed to be. Amar lochem ani navi v'akel yisparach hayosholeach hayisil l'ninvei v'hayokashu b'nai lechti aleihem. Basically, he's learning like the Rabbeinu Bachya. The word higid lohem means he spilled the beans. He told them every last detail, and the pasuk did not reveal that information. It left it for us to understand, like pretty much, like, left it for us.
Tell them the reason why he ran away?
Yeah. According to the Radak, according to Rabbeinu Bachya, he told them every last detail. And that's what the word Haggadah means. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayoyimru, Ki Ayom Holech V'Soer, Ki Ein Lanu Teicheles, Hope. The word Teicheles is a beautiful word. Teicheles V'Sikva, it's used always together with the word Sikva, Hope. What's the difference between these two words? I'm not sure. But they're two different words which are cousins. They obviously, each one has a unique connotation. Here he selects the word Teicheles, She Yishtoik Hayom, Ki Inei Holech V'Soer Yoyser. So he, when we discussed this yesterday, what is the significance of the expression "cholech v'soer"? It's getting worse. So we learned yesterday. We had a drush. We learned here in the Mitzudos a pshat. The pshat, the Hidra said that there's no. The reason why it says this is to tell us that we have to make a decision now. Time is of the essence. We don't have time. Kifana Hayoim. It's Yom Kippur. Always put yourself in the frame moment of Ne'ilah. All of the piyutim of Ne'ilah. All right. The gates are closing. The day is setting. The sun. Kifana Hayoim. Yifne different gear sois in that piyut. Yifne Hayoim. Pane Hayoim. And that's the thing. We're running out of time. The reason why it says Kaylech vis soyer is explaining why the sailors were desperate. We have to act now. Radak has a different take on why it says these expressions. It means there's no hope. These words, just a paraphrase, another way of describing, we are hopeless. There is no hope for us because the sea, the storm is not remaining in the same level. It's not getting better. It's getting worse. If it's getting worse, it means we're doomed. And therefore we're doomed, we're very desperate. What could we do? We ask you your advice. Mikol Shoin Galov, they were saw. Now over here, he's saying an entirely thing, and it's not necessarily related to this pasuk, but it's a very fascinating principle, and that is the word v'yishtoik. The word v'yishtoik literally means quiet. Silence. Sheket. Right? Sheket. Silence.
Calm.
So calm is a borrowed translation of the literal meaning of the word. Hashkeit vavetach. So there also is a borrowed term. It appears, the way the Radak is telling us, the Radak over here is coming to explain the etymology of the word of the yishtoik. Here it seemingly means that the water should subside. Things should calm down. But literally, he says, from the coil of the shoin, the sound. So let me explain this point. The word, there is noise. And when you want to quiet the noise, you say sheket. And normally, normally noise is associated with commotion, with chaos. So when the chaos goes away, then there is the sun.
I was just thinking that the word Teicheles and Tikva are two different types of hopes. Teicheles comes from the word Ayachel. I am waiting or I'm expecting.
Expectation.
Yeah.
And Tikva?
Tikva is I'm hoping. I don't know if it'll happen.
Aha. Uh-huh. A different degree of what where things are headed. Very, very fascinating. So there's either Tochel's expectations versus hope, which has a very different connotation if there's a possibility for there to be a resolution to the problem.
That's why you're starting with Tochel's
hope.
And you're going to Tikva.
Tochel's your expectation. Things don't get good, right? You start with, you expect things to turn out well, and when they don't, then you lower your standards, I hope, but it's not the same. You don't see the light end of the tunnel. Very interesting. Now, what's the word vayishtak? So here's what I'm pointing out. This is something that we discussed once before. It's a very fascinating principle. And that is oil versus water. This week will be Lag BaOmer. Lag BaOmer, it's a very funny piyut. Bar Yochai, Moshachta, how does it go? Nimshachta Ashrecha. Shemen sasoin mechavei recha. Why? And you've seen that a billion times. If you go to Meron, Bar Yochai, Moshachta, you have been anointed. You are the anointed one. Ashrecha, fortunate are you. Shemen sasoin, you are compared to delightful oil, oil that is delightful, more so mecha veirecha than your friends. What does that mean? What is shemen? What's shemen? Why do you anoint a kohen gadol with shemen? So in order to appreciate shemen, we have to appreciate water. What is the difference between shemen and mayim? There are many differences. But one fascinating thing I came across this year, and we discussed this, is sound. When you pour liquid, it makes noise. Go to Niagara Falls, you have to put on the ear protection. The roar of the water crashing into what's below, whatever that's called, it makes a loud noise. It's deafening. And you need to protect your ears from the sound. Make believe, for argument's sake, Niagara Falls was not water. It was oil. It wouldn't make a sound. If it was wine, it would be somewhere in the middle. Okay, the decibel level, every liquid in this world produces a different sound when it's poured. On the scale of decibel levels, oil, shemen, zayis, go have to ask a scientist if this is what it says in the big book, if it's true scientifically, makes the least noise, if not any noise. That's the nature of oil. Water is the top of the list. So when we talk about the Kohen Gadol, Aaron was selected the Kohen Gadol. You know what Aaron was the Kohen Gadol? Vayidoim Aaron. Aaron was silent. When Aaron experienced the tragedy of the loss of his two children, he was at his best. That was his finest moment in dealing in his emunah in the Ribbono Shel Olam, the greatest Rachmana Litzlan, the tragedy, the ultimate tragedy of this world. It could not be a greater tragedy than what he experienced. The greater challenge to his Yirah Shamayim, to who he was. And how did he respond? It was his finest moment. Vayidoim Aaron. He didn't say anything. No complaints. He accepted. He was makabel. It's unfathomable to understand how the Torah can say testimony about a person who suffers such a tragedy on the day of when they built the Mishkan and put all things together. Vayidoim. He deserves the shemen to be poured on him. Because when you pour shemen When you, what does it mean? You just put the oil. Is it the mice putting the oil? It's the meshicha. You know what meshicha is? It's the pouring of the oil. It's not the application of the oils on your body. It's the pouring of the oil. When you pour the oil on the other person, does it make any noise? There's no noise. This is Aroin. Vayidoim Aroin. A servant. A servant of Hashem. Whatever you want, Hashem, your wish is my command. I have not challenging you. I'm not going to complain and speak up and make noise. And Vayidoim, silence. Challenge water. Person comes out of the mikvah, you go into the mikvah, you're going into a body of water. Then there's the pouring of Tisha Kaben. When you pour Tisha Kaben, you know, it's a whole different. There are other things which have to be understood, which make noise. So here, we have now an appreciation. The ultimate mayim in this world is the Yam. Breishis boro elukim es hashamayim yeser tzoritz hoitzesom v'chosh alpenezom alpenezom v'ruchakim rachefes alpenei hamoyim. L'chor, there was no salt water at that time. V'ruchakim rachefes alpenei hamoyim. Was it pure H2O? No one can tell us. I mean, there are probably a million midrashim trying to. But l'chora, the world began with merachefes alpenei hamoyim. And what does that mean? The earth was just water, and water is synonymous with noise. When mayim moves about, it makes noise. There's a lot of noise. Noise is chaos. And vayamulakim hi'ar. And it's all a process. It's a process of going from chaos of noise to that moment of the Hakamas HaMishkan, when Hashem, He created the world, a world of Mayim, to the world, the day when the Mishkan was erected, on that day when it happened, the eighth day, the Miluim, Vayidoim Aaron. Aaron was silent. Aaron, the world went from a Maisa Bereshis of Mayim, which is noise, the ultimate noise, the movement, the whole world is water, flowing around water. Water moving is noise. To the day when Hashem Shechina came into this world, and on that day, an event happened, which was with earth-shattering, tragedy. Moshe said to Moshe said this, Moshe predicted this. Moshe, ki b'kroi v'yekadesh. Moshe predicted there would have to be a moment of silence. Why do Yitaki say that? I was very fascinated. That how do we commemorate? How do we commemorate people who died? I mean, by the goyim. I mean, you go to an Eretz Yisrael. They have you know, a moment of silence. It's because the world was created with noise, and the world reaches its shleimus with silence. And unfortunately, came about only in this instance, which we have no understanding. Moshe's question, tzaddik v'raloi, that's how it has to be. The silence has to be. Doesn't make one bit of sense. That's right, it doesn't. And we don't know what the answer is. But it achieves shleimus of silence. So we have over here, v'yishtoik v'yishtoik hayom me'oleinu. The world is in chaos. The yam is in essence noise. Because the yam is water in movement. It's the ultimate noise. Mimela, when you want the yam to stop, it's quiet. Silence. That's why these two words go together. And when you compare it to Shemen, the opposite. So you also have to understand that Rashbi was silenced. You know, he ran away, the whole story. There's a lot of elements of silence in the life of Rashbi. When he was in a cave, for 13 years. In essence, he was silenced. He put himself in a matzav of ayidoin. He accepted the gzera, a horrible gzera, solitary confinement for 13 years. Can we even fathom what that means? Okay, we think, oh, he was so good. He's so sad in a room to go learn. You go try it. Sitting koilo for 13 years. Well, yeah, like the Dubna Magid. I always think about the story. We'll stop with the story. The Dubna Magid, the Grod invited him. This way I heard the story. I tell these people over, they tell me I got it all wrong. All right, even if it's wrong, it's still good, I'm going to tell you. Because it's still true. Even if the story is wrong. But the story is, the way I learned it, is the Vilna Grod invited the Dubna Magid to give him Musa. He would come to him and give him Musar. And he gave him, he let him have it. So he came up to his attic and he said, Vilna Goin, you think you're such a tzaddiko? You sit here in your attic all alone and you learn Torah. Go out into the street. Go into business. You know the nisyonis you have in business. You have to engage in that, in all the activity, what goes on in the world, the geisha world, even just going to work. All of the nisyonis you have, what to look at, not to look at, and everything you come in contact with. That's a real nisyon. Sitting here in your attic learning Torah, big deal. Who do you think you are? Right? Pretty nasty things to say to the woman, but he told him to say this to him.
Yeah.
So he gave him a big yashu koyach. He escorted him down the steps, and he says, everything you said, I took very seriously. I want to just let you know one thing. You know, it's a big kunz also to sit in the attic and sit and learn the whole day. It's also a kunz. It's right, it's a kunz to go to work and behave yourself. 100%. There are a lot of nisyonos. But it's also a big kunz to be able to sit in koilel and don't go out every 5 minutes for a cup of coffee. And every 5 minutes to go and turn on, look at your smartphone. And every 5 minutes look at your watch. And to sit and learn Behasmod Rabbah. And if you can do it maybe for 1 hour, you try to do it for 2 hours. Try to do it for a whole Seder with no distractions. Try to do it for 2 Siddurim. Try to do it for a week. You won't last the day. You won't even last a few minutes. It's also a kunz. So we have, so this, we'll leave it with that. We'll stop here, take a short break, we'll do some punch.